May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
And now that we have your attention, I want to tell you about today's Attention Please. It comes in two parts. My name is Phil Anderson. The first part, Lily Haight will interview Erin Reading. She will introduce Erin and her interview, and that will come first today. Secondly, I will be interviewing P.J. Harris of the Squim Good Governance League about that organization and the good work that it does for good governance. But first, we're going to listen to Lily Haight and her interview.
This is Lily Haight from KPTZ News. Today on Attention Please, I'm speaking with Erin Reading, a local leader of the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society, which is a group that is working to build a community around the use of natural psychedelic plants and fungi, also known as entheogens. Erin has been at the forefront of an ongoing campaign to decriminalize entheogens for spiritual, therapeutic, and recreational uses. In October, Seattle's City Council passed a resolution requesting the Seattle Police Department stop spending time and money on the investigation, arrest, and prosecution of any entheogenic activity. I'm joined by Erin today to talk about her hopes for Port Townsend's own version of that resolution and the process it's taking to get there. Thanks for being here, Erin.
Great to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit about the Psychedelic Society in general, what you do, who you are, things like that?
Yeah. So the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society began in response to Oakland decriminalizing entheogens in June of 2019. And a woman named Rebecca Ramsey started working on it here, as well as myself. And Decriminalize Nature Oakland, the group that decriminalized there, brought the two of us together. And so we teamed up to create the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society. We had our first meeting actually in January of 2020 at the Castle and had about 60, 70 people there. It was really, really great. But then COVID hit, everything went on pause, and we restarted our meetings this last January on Zoom, and the group has grown very quickly. We have, I don't know exactly how many members, probably 15 to 30 come to any given meeting, but there's, you know, at least 100 people and many other supporters and people involved, and also people who come to our potlucks and other gatherings. We had a mushroom growing workshop, which was well attended, and we have quite a few different committees that are working separate from decriminalization. So we're not just focused on decrim, we're also focused on providing support structures in our community and also providing education for our community as well. So some of our committees that we have are, one is on integration, one is on microdosing, we have death care and psychedelics, sustainable relationships and psychedelics, how to hold space and guide people through difficult experiences, community-based practices and community ethics, recovery in psychedelics, and also a social justice and inclusion committee working on making sure psychedelics are accessible to everyone in our community, not only the medicines themselves, but also safe, supportive spaces.
Tell me more about the decriminalization movement here. What has the Psychedelic Society been focused on in the past year?
Yeah, it's been a really exciting year for our organization. We had taken a break due to COVID after initially starting in 2019. And it was November of last year that a woman named Annie was arrested for possession of psilocybin mushrooms. And so when that happened, that showed us that they weren't actually a lowest priority in our town, that people still could be arrested, which is what we had been told prior to that, that they were already a lowest priority and it wasn't an issue. So we started petitioning the city first to have her charges dropped for psilocybin mushrooms, and then also to decriminalize entheogens on a local level, both at the city level, and then we've also been working at the county level. But this interview is more about the city level.
Yeah. And so, but speaking of the county level, how far have you gotten with the county?
So the county has been interesting. I feel like they are much more open to our resolution and moving forward. After State versus Blake happened, do you want to say a second about what that's about?
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know what Erin is referencing here, State versus Blake was a Washington State Supreme Court ruling that found the state's felony drug possession statute was unconstitutional, actually. And it for a short time made the possession of drugs legal. But since that ruling, the state legislature has actually recriminalized them into a misdemeanor instead of a felony, which is what it was before if you were found in possession. Of course, it doesn't cover use growth, selling, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So with the county, when State versus Blake happened, we were planning to have a countywide meeting with the county commissioners and various county officials, and they canceled that meeting after State versus Blake. But then we came back to them explaining why State versus Blake did not do nearly enough, because it didn't decriminalize growing, gifting, and gathering, and using, and facilitating, and having community-based ceremonies. So after they heard from us on that, they did reschedule that meeting, and it was a really beautiful meeting. They invited people from the city to come as well. Two city council members came, as well as all the commissioners. The sheriff came. It was really awesome. And then after that meeting, the commissioners sounded like they were ready to move forward on a resolution, but we were at the time hoping to do a joint resolution. So then we were waiting for the city to be ready so that we could have them both sign this resolution. So we focused on the city for a while and kind of just waited on the county. And the city, unlike the county, once State versus Blake happened, they had had us on their agenda to have a workshop on our resolution, and they canceled that. And then after that point, refused to ever put it on the agenda again, despite several council members wanting it to be put back on the agenda.
Yeah. So one thing I was hoping you could talk more about is, you've mentioned a couple times, a resolution. So for you, what would the ideal resolution that the city council or the county commissioners would pass would look like to you?
Yeah, so it's a little different for the county and for the city. The city has more power over the funding for our police department, so their resolution can actually be a little bit stronger. The county's has to be a bit more aspirational, but they can still make a very strong aspirational resolution. So at the city level, what we want them to do is first make sure that entheogens are a lowest priority for law enforcement, anything involving entheogens, whether it's growing, gifting, gathering, facilitating, using, transporting, all of those things. And then we also want them to make that lowest priority backed up by something tangible to say they want no funding put towards any law enforcement activities regarding entheogens. So that includes, you know, writing tickets, writing anything about entheogens in a report, anything that takes any time of our police officers. And when this happened in Oakland, the Oakland police, many of them expressed a lot of gratitude for clarity in terms of what they're supposed to do, which is you ignore entheogens. They're just a plant now. Like, we're not going to spend any energy enforcing laws around them.
Like having, say, a bag of lettuce in your car.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool.
So those are the two main things we're asking on the resolution, but we're also asking for the city to call upon our prosecuting attorney to issue a policy directive that his office will also not prosecute any cases involving entheogens, and then also call upon the sheriff's department to also issue their own policy directive. They don't have any jurisdiction over the sheriff's department, but they can still call upon them. And then also to call upon any other organizations that are acting in our city, like State Patrol, for example, to also follow the spirit of this resolution.
And have you reached out to the county prosecutor before about this topic?
I have many times, and it's actually been pretty frustrating because we are asking the county prosecutor to decriminalize entheogens or participate in this act of decriminalizing entheogens by issuing a policy directive for his office saying that they will not prosecute any cases regarding entheogens. And he keeps replying that he cannot legalize them, which is not what we're asking him to do. And what we're asking him to do has already been done in another county, in Washtenaw County, Michigan. And so basically, he could take that exact same policy directive, change the words to Port Townsend, and it would be exactly what we want. And he can definitely do that. So we've been working on trying to help him understand why this is important.
Right. So one thing you mentioned was he, you know, in his responses to you, and this is James Kennedy, the prosecutor we're talking about, has had some confusion about legalization versus creating a policy directive for his own department.
Right.
And so you mentioned decriminalization. Can you briefly explain the difference between what you guys want to do, which is decriminalization, and legalization, which is something we saw happen with the cannabis industry and marijuana?
Right. So entheogens and all psychedelics really are on a track to be legalized. That's pretty much going to happen at some point in the near future. And the question is how they will be legalized. So legalization makes it so that you can regulate and sell them, unless they're legalized like lettuce, which is very unlikely because there's a lot of money in investors who want them to be commercialized or access limited to like medical healing centers where privileged people can have access, but not the common person. So decriminalization is not only, it doesn't only protect people now from using entheogens, it also protects us from when entheogens are legalized, if they are legalized in a way that would allow them to be commercialized. So we want to make sure that even if they're allowed to be sold in our state, we want to make sure that locally people can still grow, gift, and gather and have community-based ceremonies and have access for everyone and to be able to hold it in community, not in large corporations profiting off of these medicines. We believe these medicines are sacred and should not be commercialized. And if at some point, we're not 100% against selling, like the city of Oakland right now is working on an initiative to allow entheogens to be sold, but at small farmers markets, there can be no outside investors. All of the money stays local. And at some point when synthetics are sold, also have the profits from synthetics come back right to our community, not
So it's kind of about equitable access, exactly. Basically, whereas right now you could probably, if you're privileged and wealthy enough, have access to entheogens, but the regular person who doesn't have a therapist who's in touch, you know, with a network of people wouldn't necessarily even know where to start with that.
Exactly. And some people who are more likely to have negative interactions with law enforcement, they may be too fearful to use entheogens in the first place just because of that reason.
Right, right. And so I've been watching the city council meetings regularly in the last couple of months, and I noticed that the Culture and Society Committee, they've been bringing this topic up, and it's potentially going to be on the agenda in the coming month or so. So can you talk a little bit about what that process has been like and how you're feeling about that resolution?
Yeah, so the process has been both exciting and infuriating. We're really excited that Ariel Spesser, Owen Rowe, and Pam Adams have been really excited to pass this resolution. And after the city council basically ignored, there was one point where we sent in like 20 emails trying to get a resolution back on the agenda. And the city council management, I don't know what to call them.
Like the city staff, are you talking about?
Yeah, so okay. The city staff or the mayor asked for the comments to not be read out loud, even though on their website it still said they would be read out loud. And then since that point, they basically have ignored us and refused to put anything on the agenda. So the reason it was really exciting is because we have three council members that are super excited to pass this resolution, who understand where we're coming from and really understand the issue. The problem is that they asked the city attorney to write the resolution. And the city attorney has been very frustrating for us because from the very beginning, she's been saying that what we're asking for is impossible, that we can't do it. And we keep coming back with all these other cities have done it. And every time we come with something, a new reason why we can do it, she comes back with another reason we can't do it. Her latest one was that we're a small city, unlike these big cities. We don't have any special fund that's dedicated specifically for drug enforcement, so we can't control the funding. But the other cities aren't doing it that way either. They just pass the resolution. They let the police department know. The police department tells their police officers, don't spend any energy on this. The city has asked us not to spend any funds on this. It's not more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. They literally sign the resolution, pass it on to the police department so they know. And it's a trust thing, trusting that the police department will follow. Mm-hmm. And that is what has happened in other cities. And so that's how you make change. And so for us, it's really exciting that our elected officials, at least three of them, are listening and responding to us. But our city attorney is not an elected official. And the resolution that Heidi presented only made any entheogen law enforcement activity a low priority. She even took out the phrase lowest priority and made it to low priority, and then took out all the parts of Seattle's resolution, which actually made it have teeth. And so, for example, the Seattle resolution, they didn't go the funding route by removing funding. Instead, they actually took a harder route and they asked the police department to codify and come up with policy changes that would protect people from any law enforcement concerning entheogens, and for the police department to get back to them on how long that will take and to follow through with that.
Okay, so that's essentially the police department looking at their own policy manual and writing something there that says, we are not going to invest any of our time into investigating this, arresting anybody for this, or passing on charges to the prosecutor's office.
Right. And we would be totally fine if Port Townsend wants to take that track and follow Seattle. Mm-hmm. Totally support that. But it needs to be one or the other. Either the funding, which is the simpler way, which is more, we don't want to spend funds, and then trusting the police department to follow that.
Right.
Or going further and saying, yes, we want you to codify these changes. So either way is totally fine, but we need them to include one of those.
And so right now, the draft that the city council has, but hasn't voted on yet, it doesn't include any of those really strong worded requirements that right. the Seattle resolution has.
Exactly.
Okay. And so what are you hoping for in this kind of crunch to the end of the year for the city council with this issue?
Our biggest hope would be that they would really listen to the comments that we send in, that they read our resolution, that they include us in the process of whatever resolution is passed, and then that they take the time to either just pass our resolution, which takes very little time, or work with us, which also would be much more efficient than this continual process of them doing something that actually isn't in alignment with what we're asking, and then we keep having to come back and modify and push, and it would be so much more efficient if we could just work together.
Yeah, just have a round table or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Discussion. Yeah.
Right.
And so for the people who are listening to this, who might want to get involved or be passionate about this issue, how can they?
So the biggest thing would be to go to our website, which is PortTownsendPsychedelicSociety.org, and sign up for our mailing list, because that's where we'll be sending out information about what would be good to include in your public comments. You can also just directly send in a public comment. And what we really would like people to ask is that the City Council consider the request of the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society include us in the passing of the resolution, and ideally pass our resolution or something that is much closer to what we're asking for in our resolution. And we'll be sending out more details via our newsletter. And it's also great if people want to come to our community meetings. Right now they're on Zoom. Sometimes they're outside around a fire, depending on weather and time of year.
Right, whether there's gale force winds or not.
Exactly, yeah. If we can have a fire and stay warm, we do them in person. Otherwise, we have been doing them on Zoom. But they're really sweet, really great community. That's actually been the best part of all of this, is just all of the community building and people from so many diverse groups coming together and meeting each other and forging connections. And I feel like with entheogens, part of the main medicine is the entheogens, but the bigger medicine for me is like community plus entheogens, and that combination just creates so much healing.
You can learn more about the Psychedelic Society by going to PortTownsendPsychedelicSociety.org. The next City Council business meeting is set to take place on December 6th. The topic of decriminalizing entheogens is scheduled to be discussed at that time, although the official agenda has not yet been published. As always, you can give public comment ahead of time by emailing publiccomment@cityofpt.us. I'm Lily Haight. Thanks for listening to Attention, Please.
And thank you very much, Lily Haight, for an outstanding interview. Next on Attention, Please, I'm going to be speaking with PJ Harris of the SQIM Good Governance League. Hello, PJ, and welcome.
Hello, Phil. Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to have you. Can you explain the circumstances that led up to the formation of the League, and when was that?
About the beginning of the year-ish. I don't remember the date exactly. SQIM had an amazingly talented and dedicated city manager in Charlie Bush. And when a majority of the council were having him resign, stating philosophical differences, Sheena Younger, our founder, put out the word for folks to meet on Zoom to see what we could do to get to the bottom of this and keep our city from making a terrible mistake. So the meeting had 100 people there, with many more unable to get in due to the room being at its maximum. It had a big response. Many of us signed up to help, and a board, committee leaders, and hefty mailing list started soon after that. We had a Facebook group the very next day. We also filed for nonprofit status. So then what subsequently happened is a few of the SGGL leaders decided to leave their positions, when SGGL means SQIM Good Governance League, and I will say SGGL instead of League. They decided to leave their positions to run for city council, and one decided to run for school board. And the call was strong for them. By about June, we dissolved the official committees and provided consulting and support to projects with leaders that we kept in touch. The board was then down to 4 active members.
So what had been going on in SQIM prior, that is, that led to the formation of the League, the city council, the mayor, and maybe even prior to that, quite a bit of controversy around a treatment center that the Jamestown Tsklallam tribe wanted to open. It seemed like things had been brewing in SQIM for a while politically, and at least to give the appearance of it strong tilt to the left, right.
Yes, I agree. There is, I believe that there is a lot of shouting that was happening on the right. And I think that a lot of us on the left were really focused on what was going on nationally, because at that time, we were worried about the election of the president, and there was this, you know, the storming of the Capitol. And then all of a sudden, once everything simmered down and you know, we had the inauguration, we all went, oh no, what's happening in our city? I mean, that's at least what happened for me. And then we started, we started focusing on what's going on in Squim. And you're right, there was a lot happening with the Matt Clinic and all of that.
And there was an association, alleged or otherwise, between the mayor, whose name is William Armacost, I believe, and yes. QAnon. And that stirred people up as well. It's hard to get truth about such things, but it appeared that there was an association, denied by him, admitted by him at times. So that even more gave the impression that things in Squim were not like they were in Port Townsend. And of course, they probably aren't anyway. What does the term good governance mean to you and to the league?
Right. Well, good governance, I would quote our section in our vision that says good governance is based on, among other things, honesty, integrity, accessibility, inclusiveness, transparency, equity, diversity, competence, accountability, using facts and reason, exhibiting ethical behaviors, and respecting the rule of law. I feel that is a really good rounded definition of the term good governance, and I would personally add compassion for its citizens.
Well, you as an organization got involved immediately in electoral politics, and it is the year 2021, an election year for Squim. So many city council positions, I think four or five at least, were up for election, and you got involved by recruiting candidates and actually by recruiting some of the people already on council. How did you go about recruiting, and what were your criteria for whom you chose to support?
Well, for the 2021 election, we solicited nominations from, again, the membership and the board, and asked each nominated candidate if they would commit to our vision statement of supporting good governance, including serving the needs and interests of the entire community, using that section in our mission statement. And I'm going to reiterate this because I think it's important. That reads honesty, integrity, accessibility, inclusiveness, all of those, respecting the rule of law, ethical behavior, using facts and reason. They had to all agree to that. And the board then discussed the candidates and voted to approve the 5-person slate on our June 3rd board meeting. And at that meeting, we also voted to develop a more thorough endorsement process within 6 months after the 2021 election. This process was repeated for our hospital commissioner, school board, and fire district endorsements. And there were 5 council seats that were up for election.
So you were very successful. You, in fact, were 100% successful with your candidates, those you endorsed, and not just by narrow margins, but in fact by overwhelming margins. What do you attribute that level of success and that degree of difference between your candidates and the ones that they ran against?
So you're saying what made us successful, and
exactly.
Then what do you think was the difference between ours and their candidate?
Not so much the difference as what did you do as an organization to ensure that your candidates were elected, and why were they elected by such a wide margin?
Right. Well, we had 2 different things that we were focusing. We create the reputation of SGGL as an organization, as a good governance organization that is concerned about all residents of the Squim Dungeness Valley, all residents. And historically, there's less turnout for local elections. So we also believe that we needed to do as much as possible to connect with as many people as possible in a community with few public gatherings and COVID restrictions. So our little train that could work through the following strategies. We had membership, which we never formalized a membership, but we have over 600 people that have joined our Facebook group, plus a 300 people email list. We had regular membership meetings that are open to the public. We had a website, a Facebook page, a Facebook group, Instagram. We had a round one of postcards where 58 people hand wrote and mailed 3,100 postcards in early August. And then we had a round two, 86 people hand wrote and mailed 4,400 during the week of October when ballots came out. We had events that we sponsored. There was about five or six of them. We did canvassing. We supported door-to-door canvassing that was organized by Chris Walker and Lowell Rathman and a handful of others who hit most of the residents in the city. We did phone banking. Lisa Becker worked with Betsy Robbins to organize and carry out three rounds of phone calling. We ran newspaper ads. We had five of them. We did yard distribution where we distributed zillions of candidate yard signs around town. We had rallies. We promoted and supported the numerous rallies organized by Tim Wheeler. We wrote many letters to the editor. We had rack cards that were handed out at the farmer's market and other places. We had three big signs, 4x8 on busy streets. We did Facebook advertising. We reached about 2,000 people. And we also had a regular candidate consultation. So our nonprofit board member and former city council and mayor, Candace Pratt, and Bruce Cohen met with the city council candidates on a weekly basis to provide consultation, problem solve, and build cohesion among the group. That's 19 different projects in all with so many volunteers that love SQUAM. I believe one of the things that made a difference is that before even elected, the candidates were working together and showed voters that they are united and ready to get things done for the good of our town.
PJ, you have described the watering and fertilizing of the grassroots, and you certainly made the grass grow. It
yes.
could be that in the watering and the fertilizing, you might have rather tired yourself out. What is next, though? What are you going to do next, and can you maintain this level of effort in the future, do you think?
Well, what we're thinking of doing next is pulling together, well, we need to pull together a new board of directors and clarify the membership requirements. We want to interview community leaders to gather ideas about what SGGL should be doing over the next 2 years to support good governance in the Squam Dungeness Valley. And we're organizing a realistic set of priority activities that the board and membership will do in 2022 and 2023, including preparing for the November 2023 election. And the whole thing about being tired, that's why it's time for looking for a new board. A good nonprofit needs to get new blood in, to keep it vital.
So to the extent that you can, tell me about your party on election night.
Our Zoom party on election night, we were so anxious because it was before, you know, before we got the results. So we're just, you know, I remember when it was just minutes before we thought we would hear, we kept refreshing the page to tell us what was going on. And while I think we were optimistic, there's still that anxiety right beforehand. But then after that, oh my gosh, we were so joyous and so relieved that all that hard work had paid off.
Well, it most certainly did. How do people find you? People who want to either emulate you or support you?
Our website is SQUAMGoodGovernanceLeague.org, and we're on Facebook, the SQUAM Good Governance League, and we also have a community Facebook group.
PJ, it's been great talking to you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Phil.
And that just about wraps up Attention Please for this Monday afternoon. Next week on Attention Please, I will be interviewing Rose Eisler, who is the director of the Ennius Valley Community Foundation, also the owner of the Ennius Valley Store. Thank you for listening to Attention Please. I'm Phil Andrus.
May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?